This is the Improved Photography Podcast, episode number 146. Today's episode was brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your photography. Squarespace features an elegant interface, beautiful templates, and an incredible 24/7 customer support. Start building your website today at squarespace.com. and enter offer code IMPROVE at checkout to get 10% off. Squarespace, build it beautiful. Hey everybody, and welcome back to the Improved Photography Podcast. We are really excited today at Improved Photography because we just launched a brand new weekly podcast, and it's one that you guys have been asking for years. It is called Tripod, and it is the show for landscape photographers, night photography, and wildlife photography. It's the nature photography show. It's called Tripod because whenever you're doing any of those types of photography, you're always locked onto a tripod. So please be sure, like seriously, pull out your phone. It's going to take 2 seconds and subscribe to our new show, Tripod. I know you're going to love it. I'm hosting that show along with Nick Page, who's on today, as well as Majid Batazadegan, who you've heard a couple times on Improved Photography, but I know a lot of you are still getting to know him. You'll get to know him much better in the Tripod podcast. Nick, tell us what kind of things we're going to hear on Tripod. What's the show like?
Well, it kind of bounces all over the place between, like, I know we've already talked a little bit about long lenses. We've geeked out really hard on maximum sharpness. We're going to get into all kinds of post-processing talk. And, you know, how to plan a big photo expedition somewhere. So all of the things that we are constantly battling with, and it's hard to find other people to nerd out about with, that's kind of going to be what we're talking about.
Yeah, this is, if you're serious about nature photography, this is the place. I have just been baffled for years on iTunes and the podcasting world. There's no landscape photography show. It's so weird. There are like 1.5 million shows about wedding photography and street photography and that kind of stuff, but like nothing about landscapes. There's no good show for me to listen to. And so we made this show mostly for self-serving reasons. We wanted to hear a landscape photography show, and so we had to make it. So please go out and check it out. It's called Tripod, and it's available to subscribe to right now on iTunes or whatever podcast player you want to use. And please, if you would help us, go to iTunes and give it a rating. It makes a huge difference for us. We put a lot of work into it, and it makes all the difference in the world if you'll just go and give us a rating on iTunes. We really, really do appreciate that. We read every single rating as they come in. Well, today on Improved Photography, we have a lot to talk about. But first, we wanted to kind of talk about the different camera brands and kind of the state of photography right now, the state of the photography industry. This morning, we published an article on Improved Photography that goes pretty far into depth about each of the major camera brands, where they stand in terms of market share, and some of the reasons that photographers are liking them or not liking them. Now, we recognize, of course, that switching from one camera brand to the other doesn't suddenly make you a better photographer. And sometimes we get kind of the curmudgeon comments about, this isn't about photography. Well, guess what? It's fun. That's why we're talking about it. And the other reason is, serious photographers, we have thousands of dollars invested in a brand. And so if you pick a brand that doesn't have a good longevity, you know, it isn't going to be around to innovate, you can waste a ton of money. So, one, it's fun, and two, it's a topic that is important to know if you're considering a switch, which I know a lot of our audience right now is kind of at the point that we're starting to look at mirrorless, and so that's something we'll talk about today. So let's do this. Let's start with a straw poll here. I'm going to count 3, 2, 1, and I want answers from everybody. In 5 years, which is going to be the camera brand that everybody's drooling over that says, hey, this brand is head and shoulders above the rest? Okay, that's the question. We're going to count down 3, 2, 1.
Sony.
And I didn't even answer.
Nick, you got to answer.
So, okay, the thing is, like, That's great.
No, there's no the thing is. You got to say a brand.
Okay.
I've never Canon heard Nikon. Of the thing is brand.
Canon Nikon. Cause
all right, you think Canon Nikon. Good, tell us about it.
Okay. Just because like the mirrorless stuff is always going to appeal to the average shooter or the person that sets up on a tripod and doesn't need autofocus. And like I'm going to rant about a little bit later in the show, I just shot my first NFL game. And I didn't see a single mirrorless camera. And I bet in 5 years, you still won't see a single mirrorless camera at an NFL game or any other shooting situation that is quite that demanding on a camera. They're great for being small and light and forward thinking, but there's just a few things like autofocus that doesn't appeal to the average professional photographer that like needs the most out of their camera. If you're doing landscape photography, you know, the Sonys are looking awesome. If you're doing street photography, the Fujis are looking awesome. But if you're doing any wildlife or sports, then they're no longer looking quite so awesome.
But that's a pretty Marty McFly prediction. I mean, we don't have hoverboards, speaking of Back to the Future Day, but I mean, in 5 years, they could fix the autofocus problem. I mean, that's, you know, a lot happens in 5 years as far as tech goes, right?
In theory.
I think Nikon's already gone Sony sensors. So Canon, I gotta think within the 5 years, they finally figure out they can't keep producing their own sensors.
Yeah, I agree with that totally. And, you know, this has always been something that Canon photographers have kind of held over the Nikon guys and Pentax. And I always said, yeah, but you don't even make your own. And I was, who cares who makes the sensor, you know, whichever one's best. But Canon is really falling behind. Yes, it is. It's the sensor that's making these Sony cameras stand out. In fact, the software and stuff, it's not that great. The firmware on some of these cameras, they're still really buggy. There are a lot of problems with the Sony stuff, and mostly it's the firmware stuff. It's the sensors. That's awesome. You're right. And Canon, I did the math today, and the Canon 5D Mark III was announced 1,328 days ago. Holy cow, that is an old camera to be their, like, you know, the one that everybody wants. You know, there's the 1DX, whatever, that some people will buy. But, you know, when you go look at a wedding, probably shooting a Canon 5D Mark III if they shoot Canon. It's 1,328 days old, which in camera years is ancient. And you say, you know, it's still a great camera. Of course it is. It's totally is still a great camera. But 1,328 days ago, Mitt Romney was looking like he was going to be the next president of the United States. And you were talking on an iPhone 4S. If you wait that long, there's no way you can keep up with the Sonys that on average are updating like every 500 days each model. There's no way you can keep up with that. And so while the Canon 5D Mark III is a great camera, it's old technology. And right now what we're seeing is nobody's interested in buying that camera right now. If you're buying a camera right now, everybody's talking A7R II. You know, it's just too long between updates. And I agree with you, Jeff. I think that's going to kill Canon if they don't fix it.
Yeah.
And they're clearly trying so hard to stay in that market. They've got these fancy, huge megapixel camera sensors that they're piloting out there,
like seeing the 5DS.
No, even bigger. There's like a
you're talking about the
25 megapixel
the prototype
sensor prototyped. Yeah, they're clearly trying to do that, but the low light and they have the really super low light performance one too. I forget the.
I think it's million ISO.
Yeah, right, it's right. Some ridiculous ISO. So they're clearly putting some efforts into trying to compete there. And it just seems like it's not worth it. Just Sony's doing such a great job. Just go use those sensors and focus on the other things that make Canon great.
So there's a couple sides to this argument, right? Like let's say that I go out and I buy an A7 R2. And then in 10 months, they release an A7 R3. My investment just like got cut in half. Sure. Like I've just lost half of what I spent. The person
not only
that bought
that, but they may have like huge problems with right. one, and rather than exactly. fix it, I'll just release a new one, and whoever got that one, sorry.
Right.
That's the, yeah. the and, cost of buying it early.
And so like the person that bought the 5D Mark III 3 years ago, that investment has like held its value amazingly. Like by the time they turn around and sell it for, let's say, $1,000 loss, they rented it for like how much? Like maybe like $50 a year, you know, like they, okay, that's really terrible math, but that person is maintaining their investment much better. Like that, it's holding its value much better. And
well, I agree that it is holding value better, but I disagree that it's by much of a margin. If you look at the Canon 1DX, their flagship, when it was announced, it was almost $7,000, and now you can get one for a little bit for $4,500. Even though it's still the current model, it's you've lost a ton of value still. So I agree with you that it is better, but not by a ton.
That's true.
We see some good and bad things with what Canon is doing right now. What do you think about Nikon? As I look through the data of how long it takes between releases, Nikon is actually releasing very quickly. Actually, it's very close to on par with how fast Sony is updating their cameras. And I guess the question that I want to ask is, do we see any real benefit right now from that? Would you say that Nikon's lineup of, let's say, their full frame cameras that we're seeing the faster updates than Canon, would you say that Nikon's cameras are generally ahead of what we're seeing from Canon in the full frame space?
Well, if you're looking at like specs like dynamic range and the quality of the sensor, definitely. As much as it pains me to say it as a Canon shooter, the Nikons are kind of like the perfect blend of they have really good focusing systems and they have really good sensors. Canon can't really say that it has as good of a sensor as the D810. Like that sensor is amazing for landscape photography.
Really is.
And plus it has a good focusing system. So right now the Nikon stuff, I think because it's been updated more often, it's certainly a little bit ahead of the Canon stuff in terms of the nice blend of an awesome sensor and a good focusing system. You know, that it's also a huge camera. So, you know, if people looking at for a smaller camera, that's not going to appeal. It's not going to be as appealing.
Yeah, and I would say in the crop sensor range, I don't really see hardly any difference between Canon and Nikon, you know, who's ahead generally. They're so competitive in that space. I don't see a whole lot of difference, but I would agree with you, Nick. While there are benefits to the Canon side for sure, I would say generally that Nikon's full frames are a little bit ahead right now.
And I concur with the crop sensor thing. If someone has an older crop sensor camera and they're asking me, saying, hey, Darren, I'm looking to upgrade to either the 70 Mark II or the D7200, I believe is the newest one from Nikon, I say whichever lenses you have already invested money in, stick with your brand because they're so even on the playing field. So, I mean, some websites will say the 7 or the D7200 is much better, but I think it's negligible.
Okay, how about the mirrorless space? What do you think about there? We have Fuji, Olympus, Panasonic, and Sony are all major players in mirrorless. So we talked about some of the major advantages that Sony has right now, but that's in the full frame sphere, and that brings on a whole new host of problems. For example, the much higher price tag and the much heavier weight of the camera. So I think Fuji's mirrorless cameras are really butting head-to-head with DSLRs, where Fuji, Olympus, and Panasonic are making smaller cameras that are really very different from a DSLR and may or may not be competing with them. So in that space, who do you see as being ahead, Darren? What do you think? Fuji, Olympus, or Panasonic, or Sony's smaller cameras like the A6000?
I would say Fuji to start with, and then I would probably say Panasonic because I played around with one in Chicago and you can actually touch the viewfinder, the screen, the big LCD and focus. And I think that's pretty intuitive to be able to focus while you're looking through the electronic viewfinder, touch the back of the screen, hit your focus. I know it's not DSLR fast, but you don't have to pull your eye away at all or even open your other eye. So I think that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I like the touch screens. The problem is you put your face up to the camera and your nose touches the LCD and suddenly you've focused.
You don't want to focus with your nose, Jim? Come on.
Well, I don't think so, no.
And also for someone who is dusting off their film camera and like, ah, I kind of want to get it in digital. I haven't shot for, you know, 10, 20 years. The Fuji has all those dials and it's just like going back to a film camera to adjust the dials for aperture, ISO, and all those other things that matter within the exposure triangle. So I think it's a really easy camera to pick up and learn.
It's the size. It's the cost. The cost is so much less.
At this photography conference I just went to, I picked up a Fuji for the very first time and looked through it. And what a trippy experience. Like being able to see your exposure in the viewfinder, that in itself has so many advantages. Being able to see what your exposure is before you ever even take the picture. And just watching your focus points dance around is pretty cool. And
I think I would have learned it so much faster with that. You can see so much easier the different settings and what it does to the exposures and the focus.
Yep.
And that would have helped a ton to get it so much faster than it did.
And not having to decide on a mode that you're shooting in. You just freeform the aperture, shutter, and ISO, and that is beautiful.
That's pretty cool.
Well, one interesting fact that I dug up as I was researching Fuji's camera position in the market is that their total, like Fujifilm as a company, their total investment in cameras is only about 8% of their total business. It's tiny. And so my fear for Fuji is that if some kind of external factor happens and their camera sales go down, it's almost to the point that you can say, you know, it's so small. And that really is a fear. There's no way that's happening with Sony. Sony is like doubling, tripling, and quadrupling down on their on the imaging side of their business, both the sensors and the cameras themselves. And that's helpful when you're investing a lot of money into the camera.
Yeah, there's so much more stability in a really large company like that. You know, Canon, you pretty much don't have to worry about. Sony, you definitely don't have to worry about. Nikon, you know, they're heavily, they're like, you know, I don't know what percent it is, but I would say it's like 85%, 90%, you know, cameras. And optics. So, you know, if they have a few bad years of, you know, sales, it's going to be the customer that takes the hit on something like that. You have to worry about stuff like that when you're heavily invested in a lens system or something.
Yeah, and I don't know what that percentage is for Nikon, but yeah, it is very interesting. Well, that's kind of the state of the camera industry. Check out the full article on improvephotography.com. Just search state of the photography industry and it'll come right up. Some really interesting facts and figures to kind of look through and consider, especially if you're looking at a new camera system to go to. But Nick, big news in your world this week. You mentioned before that you shot your first NFL game, which is American football. And so tell us all about it.
Oh, such a cool experience. Like, seriously, that's a bucket list item checked off of my list. It was just amazing. So I had a friend and he was able to pull some strings, get me credentials for the game. I actually found out on a Thursday that I had credentials to shoot the game on Sunday. So it left me scrambling to buy plane tickets and I had like three layovers to fly to Detroit. But I got there and it was just so cool. The night before we went to the game, Brian McGuckin and I, we decided just kind of on a whim, like, you know, we should go get a skyline shot from across the river of Detroit. And we're like, yeah, let's do that. And we're like, oh, that's Canada, isn't it? Okay, well, let's just give it a try. So we go across the border and we get stuck in customs literally for like 45 minutes getting into Canada.
Did you see Trey Ratcliffe there?
Yeah, yeah, I know. and so after 45 minutes, we go get into Canada. Nick is being the typical West Coast guy over there freezing to death in shorts because I was dumb enough to wear shorts. And we take pictures for 20 minutes, half hour, and then we come back. It took us an hour and a half in customs to get back into the United States. And they're asking us all kinds of funny questions and basically treating us like terrorists. And so we finally got back and I got a pretty cool skyline shot of Detroit. But anyways, when we actually went down to shoot the game, we get inside after going through security and stuff. And what's cool is, first of all, I didn't have to pay to get into an NFL game. That in itself is cool. But we had a line of like 3 people, and everybody else had a line of like 40,000 people. And so we were like first in the field. We go right down onto the field, and Barry Sanders was there getting his Hall of Fame ring, and I was standing 10 feet from Barry Sanders. I mean, I was just like basically bumping shoulders with all of these pro NFL guys, and it was just such a cool experience. Shooting the game itself was a good learning experience, because I've shot quite a bit of high school football. I've shot some college games, but NFL is a whole new ball game. We're talking about the best athletes in the world, and they are so crazy fast. And that's why I was talking about.
So tell us some of the tips you learned as you were doing it. I mean, they're super fast. They're flying around the field. So give us the rundown of what you did to shoot them.
First, what gear?
Okay.
Yeah. Forget the camera settings. Talks about the gear. Come on.
So I took a pair of 5D Mark III's with me. My lenses, I had a Sigma 120 to 300 f/2.8. And then I took...
Was 300 long enough?
It left me wanting. For sure. I took some teleconverters. I gave those a try, but I just lost too much light and focused too slow, and I just quickly abandoned the teleconverters. That just doesn't work. When the action got close to me, the 300 was awesome. I was definitely able to get some good shots. I just had to be patient for it. I couldn't shoot the full length of the field. Brian was shooting with a 400 f/2.8 on a crop sensor body on the 7D Mark II, and he was able to shoot like completely across the field. It was ridiculous. He actually got one really awesome shot from 90 yards away, which is just crazy.
Nice.
But you know, when the action got close to him, he was like, he was done. And that's kind of what was nice about that Sigma, is because I could zoom out a little bit, and that helped. But I had 2 bodies on me. I had the 120 to 300 on a monopod. And then on my Black Rapid strap, I had a wide angle lens. Generally, it was the 28 to 70. There for a while, I had my 16 to 35. But the action never really came close enough to me to ever need the 16 to 35. And if it did come that close to me, I was usually like flinching, because I've never felt so small in my life. We're talking about guys that are like 6'8", 350 pounds, running really fast, and they're armored. And I'm like down on my knees. If they came towards me, there's nothing I could do other than just like flinch. So
what focal length did you use with that one shot where the guy looks like he's looking you directly in the eye and about ready to slide into you? Was he that close?
I'm trying to think of which one it was.
I think it was a touchdown play, and he has direct eye contact with the viewer, the image.
Okay. I would say that was probably shot at like 120, because he was actually close. So I had zoomed out. For the majority of the game, I was shooting at 300 millimeters for sure. I was definitely spending a lot more time at that end of the focal range and then having to crop. But settings wise, it's so much better lit than what I'm used to. I'm used to really poor lighting, but settings wise, I didn't have to get above like ISO 2500 or so. Like most of my shots were shot at either ISO 2000 or 2500, which is significantly better than what I'm used to. And so that was nice. So I spent the entire game down on my knees, and I was on AstroTurf, and that led to really sore knees that were just like eaten up by the end of the game. Like my legs were just like raw.
And it was really cool being home following you. I mean, I was actually taking pictures of my DVR and pausing. It was like playing Where's Waldo on the TV? Where's Nick? I had to find the beard. It's so hard to find Brian, but luckily you had that long goatee, and I was like, all right, there he is. Pause, take a picture, upload to Facebook so Annalise can see it.
It's pretty crazy. I made it into quite a few replays because I had several touchdowns scored like right in front of me. And so another tip that I have is the best place to shoot from are the end zones. There's a reason that when you watch the game and you see all the photographers, they're generally sitting kneeling down at the end of the end zone, because that really is the best spot. You, no matter what happens, you can generally see it. The action is coming towards you. So when they break free and they're running right at you. And when they score a touchdown, it happens right in front of you. So that's another tip that I had.
How about going into the stadium? Did they check your gear? What was the security like?
Yeah, they checked. They opened my bag. They kind of peeked through it with a stick and rubber gloves, but they didn't give me too hard of a time. It was just a quick check. The media has their own line that they go to. So that's pretty much all they do is check camera bags and stuff. And I guess Brian said that he's used to there being more photographers. But even at this game, there was probably like, we'll say 20 photographers, something like that. We were just kind of like all going to the same places, working around each other. And there's a lot of really interesting things. Like you have to, there's lots of camera crews there. There was Fox Sports, there was NFL Network, and then there was ESPN, and they all have their own camera systems. And so there's just cables everywhere, and the cables are moving, and you have to be really careful not to like step on a cable, or else like you're going to, you know, jerk the cable out of the camera or something. And there's also cameras at the end of the end zone, so you have to duck underneath those. And there's places that you can and cannot go, all kinds of stuff that I had to kind of learn. And luckily, like I was just kind of following Brian around. He's done it before and he knew all the rules. So, but I felt like I came home with some pretty good images, especially for it being my first time. And literally like, even with my two 5D Mark IIIs, that 120 to 300 and all the gear I had like the most entry level setup of anybody there. There was one girl with a point and shoot, but I'm pretty sure she wasn't shooting for the media. She was, I don't know what she was doing, but everybody else had like 400 2.8s. There was a couple of 500 F4s. There was like some really big glass there, and they were all shooting D4s and 1DXs and stuff. And when they're firing, it just sounds like machine guns, you know. And mine's just like tick, 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 tick. And if you know that you don't have all those frames per second, you just have to kind of time things, and you have to try to time it perfectly rather than just like fire all the way through a play and hope that you got something good. Yeah, it was just such a cool experience. It was a serious bucket list item that I got to check off the other day. So pretty cool.
So given the amount of light that was there, do you think you would have rather had the crop?
No.
With a faster frame rate?
You know, like I'm just a junkie for a full frame sensor. Like I just like the way higher ISOs look on a full frame. So I don't think I would give it up for a crop. I would just try to rent a bigger, more expensive lens next time.
Well, very cool. That's awesome. And the photos that you got from the trip were really, really cool. Looks like you had a very successful first shoot. Thanks for sharing it with us. Well, before we go and talk much, much more about photography, we want to take a second and thank Squarespace for supporting Improved Photography. Look, when you're running a business, it's really tough. There you have a million things to do. And when I first started my photography business, the website was last on my list every single time. And it ended up being the thing that I always forgot about, kind of pushed to the side. And then the business would start to dry up. I wasn't getting enough shoots booked. And I would say, oh, hey, it's because I haven't updated my marketing in a long time. And Squarespace really just takes that problem completely away from you, because it makes it lightning fast to update, easy to set up. Anytime new technology comes by, it's easy to implement into your website because they're doing it for you. I love the designs from Squarespace. They're fully responsive and they show the photos big. They show a big full screen photo so that people can enjoy the photos that you work so hard to take. Well, you can try out Squarespace for as little as $8 a month. And if you use offer code IMPROVE at checkout, you can get an even better deal. That'll give you 10% off your first purchase. So try out Squarespace and you'll get 10% off when you use offer code IMPROVE at checkout for your first purchase. And we thank Squarespace for their support of Improved Photography. Squarespace, build it beautiful. Well, we have a lot more to talk about. I'm going to slip in my 5-minute segment here because it's going to be short, maybe a 3-minute segment. First of all, the FAA has new rules out in the United States that it looks like they're going to make every drone owner register their drone. And it looks like it's happening fast. I thought this was really overreacting, but I heard a statistic from the FAA that planes are spotting 1,000 drones a month in the air. Wow, that is a little bit scary if planes are spotting them 1,000 times a month right now. I think the purpose of registering the drones is really just so that if something does happen, the FAA will know whose door to come knocking on. So it's kind of an interesting development. It's supposed to be in place as early as the end of November. So I'm interested to see that. Also, I wanted to make a quick side note. If you are applying for a Section 333 exemption to be able to use your drone commercially, I just saved you a huge amount of time. Go to Improve Photography and just search drone laws. And I published a template that you can use to submit to the FAA to get your exemption. Since I'm a lawyer, I spent several days reading through all the laws and writing a template, and I submitted my petition for exemption. It's supposed to take 120 days. So if you're interested in that, like seriously, you can be done in 5 minutes. Just grab my template, pop your info in it, and submit it. It's free to do. So if you have any interest in that, it's definitely worth checking out. Notice of errata. A couple weeks ago, Nick and I were talking about white balancing RAW files, and I said, and I thought this was true, that you could white balance a JPEG just exactly as well as you can white balance a RAW file. Well, I had quite a few of you submit RAW files to me for testing, and in a lot of situations, that's true. It comes out exactly the same. But in a lot of situations, that's not true. There are some times that you just can't get a JPEG to look quite right, and the RAW file quickly white balances. So I admit defeat, Nick Page. I was wrong here. yes, white balancing a JPEG is really not as good.
Wait, can you say that one more time?
Yes, I admit, Nick Page, white balancing a JPEG is not as good as a RAW. You won't hear that ever again.
That feels good. All right.
The last thing I want to mention is the government is just driving me insane with our free photography workshops. So my vision with the free photography workshops is that I go to places that I want to shoot. I invite the community with me, and we go out and have some fun days together shooting. Unfortunately, the government hates it when you use the resources that we pay taxes to build. And so with this trip in Utah and Arizona that we're doing, that we have almost 100 people registered to go with us, 100 of you guys, the government is just going crazy about this. They want us to have a park ranger follow us around the whole time we're in the park, and we have to pay for him to be there. We have to pay a huge fee to use the park at all. And we have to submit exactly what cars are going in, exactly where you're going, and how long you're going to be there. You can't just drive around the park and take pictures in a national park. It's just crazy. We are fighting tooth and nail to make this happen. Yes, we're going to make it happen somehow. But unfortunately, it also means we have to get insurance. And I've spent days on this, and my personal assistant has spent weeks on this trying to get this set up. So just notice when we're doing these free photography workshops, we're going to have to start charging a very small fee, under $40, to come join us to meet with all these expenses that the government should not be charging us in the first place, but they love red tape. I'm fighting as hard as I can to keep these just simple, fun photography events. But also we want to go to the coolest locations in the world. And so it's adding a little bit of complexity. And so I hope everybody doesn't mind. It's a very small amount. That's just notice of what we're doing with the free photography workshops. It has slowed us down our schedule for next year. We only have one plan. Well, we have one plan that's free. The Yellowstone workshop is in the start of January, and registration is open for that right now. And we hope to be announcing others further down the road, but we're going to have to be a lot more careful on where we go because we're getting a lot of pushback from Big Brother, the government. So that's all I have to share with you guys this week. Darren, what do you have for us?
Well, mine was something that I stumbled upon on a photo walk. I went out on a photo walk last Sunday, and they were talking about doing time lapse. And we've been talking on the podcast for a while about how Facebook has really been pushing video. And I said, well, I've never really been a fan of shooting video unless it's on my iPhone. How can I do this? And it was just like fate. This photo walk showed up in Omaha, Nebraska, and they're focusing on time lapse. So I figured I would shoot some frames, and then I got home and I said, well, I don't know Adobe Premiere that well. I haven't installed on my computer. I haven't really messed around with that much. So are there any ways that I can create a time lapse using something else based on what I have in the computer? And what I had was Photoshop. And surprisingly, you can take beautiful images that you're accustomed to doing because most of the people who listen to the show are photographers, but you can turn it into a video. And like I said on this tutorial that I'm going to talk about here soon, it blows up your exposure on your business page. I've shared some pictures from that photo walk, and it is seen by half the people that are watching the video. So it's really great to be able to use something like this. And some examples where time-lapse video is going to work really well are street scenes, like a concert venue or an NFL stadium like Nick visited, filling up and emptying out traffic in a major city. Anything where there's just any type of movement in the scene and any type of change, like sunrise, sunset, all of that works for a time lapse. And you could just plug it into Photoshop, watch this tutorial that's going to be posted in the show notes, because Photoshop has been able to handle video ever since CS6 has been around. And all you really have to do is plug it in there. Photoshop realizes there's a sequence of images in there, and you create a video, and it's ready to go on Facebook, YouTube, or wherever you want to push it out. So make sure to check out the show notes for the show on a quick tutorial that I created last night on how to create awesome time lapses on the go.
Very cool. And Jeff, how about you?
So I wanted to talk just a little bit about Windows 10 and El Capitan updates, give everyone kind of a status of where we're at on that, since I've been recommending holding and not installing either one. I've been getting really good positive feedback, by the way, on my super guide to buying a Windows PC for photo editing. And that's something that, if you haven't gone and checked that out, if you're a Windows PC user and you're tired of having things be slow when you're doing photo editing, you think it's time to get a new computer, go check out that article. So this kind of goes along with that a little bit. Windows 10, on October 21st, 2015, Microsoft announced that their next significant update to Windows 10, which is codenamed Threshold 2, is coming sometime in November. And this is, we've talked before about how it seems like the marketers won the day and were able to get the engineers to publish something of Windows 10 well before it was truly ready. And so that's kind of that end of July release. They put something out there. They've put out several patches since then, but it's this Threshold 2 update where I'm thinking the engineers are finally going to catch up with the marketers, and the operating system's finally going to be kind of complete for how they had envisioned it, how they were trying to build it. So I fully expect that once Threshold 2 is released, that's going to be when I'm going to finally feel comfortable in saying it's all clear and photographers should look to upgrade to it. That's not to say that they should do it in November, though. I think that at this point, you probably should just plan on waiting till the first of the year. Let Threshold 2 be out there for a little while. Let's see how the updates go. They'll put out patches, and they'll continue to put out some updates. Let's see how the devices respond. Make sure that that the problems that we have seen, like with Wacom tablets in particular, are working well at that point. And then I'll give you the all clear about that going. Also on October 21st, Apple didn't just announce, they released a fairly significant patch update to El Capitan. So it's 10.11.1. And in that update, there's a bunch of bug fixes. There's some that they kind of said were very specifically done to help with some issues running Office 2016. So that's the new version of Microsoft Office, the part of the Office 365 subscription, and you can get Office 2016 apps, and they have been blowing up under El Capitan. It worked fine in Yosemite, but when you had El Capitan, they would die on startup and lots of crashing problems and so on. And I'm guessing that whatever was causing that grief for the Office apps, there's other apps that were struggling with the same problems. And so with this update, that's fixed, supposedly. I haven't seen anyone confirm that. That's just as Apple put out their update, that's what they said was in there. There's also some more security updates and bug fixes to Safari and iTunes and stuff like that. And there's new emojis that they put out there, which one of them's a taco.
Yeah.
So,
hey. Yeah.
So, so just for our Photo Taco podcast, Apple put in there. No, it just happens to be coincidental. But there's an emoji now that's a taco. So again, though, I don't recommend kind of going right out of the gate when these things are available. Wait for a little while. And in fact, even when I give you the all clear, if you have something like, don't do something where you apply the upgrade in the morning and then you're planning to do a photo shoot at it at night or that evening or that afternoon. Wait until you have 2 or 3 days where you've got a breather, you have a bit of a break, and you can afford to have a couple of speed bumps in case something goes really strange in your upgrade or you have to roll back. If you have to go back to restore it, then give yourself some time to work that out and not be under a time crunch to do some kind of delivery to your clients. So that's what I got.
Very good. Thank you. Well, in every episode, we like to share a doodad of the week. And Darren, I'm going to throw this one over to you first.
Well, mine has to do with time lapses because I tested it out for the first time. They've been a advertiser on the podcast and I tested out a trigger trap. It is pretty darn cool. We also own the expensive Canon intervalometer and it really doesn't do anything that nice compared to what Nick's talked about with his Cam Ranger that's also pretty pricey. But this thing, this dongle, is $39. It works with over 300 different cameras that Trigger Trap supports, and all you really need to do is plug it into your smartphone of choice, download the app. It walks you through how to plug it into your camera, what settings you need to put on your camera, and you can do really cool things like time lapses, accelerated time lapses. You can actually do movement ones where you can actually follow cars along the street. There's so many cool things you can do, and it just turns your camera into a whole new machine. So if you want to breathe new life into old camera technology, there's pretty good chance that Trigger Trap is going to be supported on your camera of choice. Just go to triggertrap.com, plug in your camera. They'll tell you which dongle to look for on Amazon, or you can buy directly from them. Either way, it's a great, great doodad that I definitely have in my Amazon shopping cart.
Very cool. Yeah, I love Trigger Trap. It's amazing what they do for not a lot of money. It's very cool stuff. Nick, how about you?
Mine is going to be the Sigma 120 to 300 f/2.8 sport lens. That's what I took with me to the NFL game that I shot. Really a cool lens. It's, you know, a 300-2.8 from Canon is like a $5,000 to $6,000 lens. This is a 300-2.8, but it's also zoomable and it sells for several $1,000s cheaper. So it's a really cool lens. I'm going to be doing a review on it. Look for that on YouTube here in the next week or two. But like all the other sport lenses, it's really made really well. It's really sharp. Really happy with it. So stay tuned for the review on that. And that's what I got.
Very cool. Jeff?
Okay, so mine's going to be one that's kind of been a doodad before, I think, from one of us. But it's the Color Monkey display from X-Rite, monitor calibration tool. It's a fairly cheap investment to go and get one of these, but it makes such a huge difference when you're going to do photo editing. And I like this one because it's very transportable between a computer to a laptop. It'll even help to calibrate a projector so that you can have a projector look good or for home theater. So a really cheap, great way to be able to make sure your screens are calibrated. It came to mind again because I did a photo taco this week on color spaces. It's important to have your monitor calibrated.
Well, I want to recommend two things that I've been getting tons of good feedback on. Both of them are products on Improved Photography, but they are really cheap. It's like two Big Macs. One is Nick's sky replacement tutorial has been getting tons of good feedback. If you shoot, you know, real estate and you have a boring background behind the house and you want to learn how to put in a beautiful sunset, you got it. You know, same thing with portraits, even landscapes, whatever it is you're shooting. If you want to learn how to change that sky, be sure to check that out. Just go to Improved Photography and look for the sky replacement tutorial in the search bar. You'll find it easily. And also, I came out with the photography contracts that I use. If you make any money at all with your photography, you've got to be using contracts. It can create such a mess and it's completely unnecessary. For $10, you get all the contracts that you'll need to run a photography business. So check those out on improvephotography.com. I think we're going to be continuing to do this. The feedback we've got on them was really positive. So these $10 tutorials are things that we're putting a lot more effort into, you know, than a normal blog post. But we want to make sure is accessible to everybody that you can get it. So thank you everybody for joining us on this episode of the Improve Photography Podcast. Now don't be a crazy person and miss out on our new show, Tripod. Head on over to iTunes and check out Tripod, our new podcast for landscape and nature photography. We appreciate your support of the new show. We're putting a lot of new effort into these shows, and so we'd love to see all of you over there. Thanks for joining us. Bye.